Yo. Can you hear me?
You listening to
What a week.
Hi, welcome to another episode of Wow, What a Week. We are hanging out with an incredible young man. When I was 10 years old, I forced my Uncle Douglas on a Wednesday night to take me to the City Hall to watch his dad perform on stage.
Wow.
He's just as great as his dad. He's up next.
This is
What a week.
Celebrity guest.
Welcome to Wow, What a Week. Our guest is in the building. We're sitting down with a man who carries one of the most recognizable musical surnames in South Africa. But he's carved out a sound and identity entirely on his own. Singer, songwriter, guitarist Jesse Clegg is in the building. We're talking life, music, grief, and everything in between. Please welcome Jesse Clegg.
Thank you, brother. What an honor to be here, man.
How you doing, brother, man?
I'm good, man. Jeez, I'm just... it's so great to be here with you because I feel like we're both sort of veterans.
Yes.
And you've interviewed me so many times on different radio stations.
On 5FM.
Yeah.
Yes.
And it's just bringing back memories of like the industry and like starting out in the industry. And I don't know, it's so cool to be here, man. Thank you.
And the fact that we're still here.
We're still here. We're still surviving.
many have gotten on the horse and never made it to the finish line.
Yeah,
so true. The fact that we're still in the rodeo for me is not only a blessing, but almost a testament to willingness to stay the course.
Yeah.
What does staying the course mean to you?
I mean, I think I had a really good role model in my father, and I just saw, you know, I grew up in the music industry. The first 6 years of my life was spent on tour with my dad. You know, they were touring 9 months of the year. So we would be in hotel rooms and backstage at shows and airports. And I think it gave me a very disillusioned sense of what being a career musician
is. Oh, yes.
You know, it's you know, you see the glam and you see
the
shows and all the other stuff. But I got to see what it means, like traveling, the discipline, you know, the real attention to detail, the love of songwriting and just the long-term commitment to a life in music. And so I think that's been a really helpful thing for me because I have a very long view of where I'm going as an artist. And I had a good role model who showed me that, you know, it's not about your next song.
Yes.
It's actually about your artistic journey.
Mm.
You know, whether your next song is the biggest hit in the world or if it doesn't connect, like you're on a long journey. You have to love songwriting. You have to love what you do. And I think that's been a saving grace for me.
May I tell you my fondest memory of your pops?
Yes, please.
My first memory of your pops was in 1984. You 4 years before you were born.
I wasn't born, yeah.
Exactly, 4 years before you were born. 1984, I was in grade six. And my uncle, or my dad's nephew, Douglas, lived with us. And I found out that he was going to watch your dad on stage. There was Juluka and Black Five. Black Five were like a boy band of the time.
Wow.
They were doing a tour of the subcontinent. Mm. So I think they were doing South Africa, Botswana, Lesotho, Swaziland, and Zim. And they were going to make a stop in Gabs, in Bots.
Wow.
And I convinced my parents that my Uncle Douglas must go with me on a Wednesday night to watch your dad on stage.
That's amazing.
Because it was also a big novelty at the time that there's this white Zulu man.
Yeah.
So we went, my Uncle Douglas, and we stood at the back of the City Hall. I was on his shoulders the whole night watching your dad work his magic.
Wow.
For me, it was life-changing in that I realized that, wow, when you love what you do and you do it well enough, it can feed you.
Absolutely, man.
And Thursday morning, I was dozing off in class, but it was worth it.
That's beautiful.
And as fate would have it, I got to interview your dad, I think not only once, but twice.
Yeah.
And the one memory I have of him is telling the story about how he used to go upstairs to the quarters where the hired help lived. And they'd have these impromptu concerts in this little servants' quarters.
Yeah.
And he says there was a time there was the cops raided where they were.
Mm.
And as they raided this room, it was him and 20 Zulu men playing music. And he's like, the first thing the cop said to him was, "Are you okay?"
Yeah, I know, man. It's an amazing
and
history.
Final memory.
Yes.
2017, 2018, I'm at Metro FM and we're scheduled to interview your dad. He was not well.
Mm.
He had a debilitating headache and he still showed up.
Yeah.
He still showed up. I remember I had tears in my eyes thinking about how I can imagine the pain you're in.
Mm.
But you're here.
Yeah. Man, I have so many memories of that period. Firstly, that's so beautiful that you got to see him at that age and it was such a formative memory.
Yes.
That's incredible. And I have the same memories being, you know, growing up at his shows and watching him, and it was just a wondrous time.
Sure.
And to see French people trying to sing Zulu lyrics.
Yes.
You know, like you just see how powerful music is. That was the impact for me. It was just like, these people don't speak English or Zulu.
Yes.
And this music means so much to them. Like this thing can cut through language. It can cut through politics. It can cut through culture. It's just this universal human language.
Mm.
And I think for me, that was just so inspiring in my life. But like towards the end, you know, when he was diagnosed, I mean, it was just so amazing how he handled that time. You know, he was, when he was diagnosed, he was told he had 6 months and he lived for 5 years.
Yeah.
And I toured with him for the first time because we you know, for most of my career, I really wanted our paths to be very separate.
Yes.
Even though we were very close, like I needed to find my own identity and carve my own name out.
And that is what my son is struggling with right now.
Yeah.
And that's why my son never asks me for help.
Yeah.
Because he says every door he opens, he wants to open off his own steam. And I get
exactly.
it. Sometimes it hurts because I miss out on milestones I feel I could have been a part of.
Yeah.
But I get why he wants to not be in my shadow.
Yeah. I mean, I remember when my first album went, it went platinum.
Mm.
And we had this big media event and my dad was so upset because he wasn't invited.
Oh, yes.
He was like, "Why can't I come?" And I was like, "Dad, you can't be there. This is my night, man."
Because you're going to steal the show, Dad.
Yeah. But at the end, you know, it's funny when someone gets a diagnosis like that and you actually have to face the issue and it's something that it suddenly like resensitizes you to your connection and your love for this person. And yes. I was like, you know what? Me and my dad have not been on stage together.
Mm.
And this might be our last chance.
Yes.
You know? And we went for 3 years, we toured the world together. He did a final journey tour. It was called The Final Journey. And we did and every single show around the world was his last show in that place ever.
Imagine, bro.
So it was this emotional roller coaster, man. Like, you know, I mean, we did a US and Europe and South Africa and parts of Africa, but because it was announced as his farewell tour, you know, there was just this like feeling in the room every single night of like, it was like celebration and grief, you know. It was like this sadness and this happiness.
Bittersweet, man.
Yeah, man. And like, in a way, it really helped me process some of the things that we went through. And I think I was so proud of him because he was not well, you know, and he got up every single night. He played 2 hour show. He danced, you know, he was just coming off of chemo, man. He danced and he sang and he played some of the best shows of his career, actually.
Yeah.
And I, you know, especially in the beginning, you know, no one knew he was ill.
I was going to say, I think for a lot of us, we only realized after the fact that it was the last show. He was saying goodbye.
Yeah, and I was the only one on the tours that knew exactly what was going on. Mm. So I was watching him and trying to take care of him. And, you know, we'd be on stage together and I'd be just so worried about him.
Yeah.
And I just have this incredible memory, man, of the final show that he ever played, the last time I ever saw him on stage.
Mm.
And we'd just done, you know, probably over 50, 60 shows, you know, and he was tired, man. And, you know, he was going back into chemo. And I was standing at the side of the stage and watching him play in East London.
Hmm.
It was the final one. It was a big, big outdoor thing. And I could see he was getting so tired. And I was just like keeping my eye on him. And And the show finished and they bowed and he started walking back to me. And I was like, come, Dad, like, let's go rest, you know.
We're done.
Yeah, and everyone was standing and applauding. Mm. And it was the last show, and you knew it was the last show, you know. And he walked to me, and he was like, turned around, went back out onto the stage and did his Zulu gear.
Yes.
Last one, you know, just, yeah. I'm here, yeah. Still here.
Yeah.
And I was just like, you know, it was so amazing. Like, his stamina, his endurance, his discipline. And his love for it, you know, just right until the end. Absolute warrior, right until the end.
What conversations would you say you were almost forced to have, knowing what you knew about that last tour, that you might not have had, was it not a last tour?
You know,
are there any? Or are there,
you know,
any that,
I mean,
or are there any that stand out that you had on that last tour?
I think, like, you know, what was hard is that we were still trying to stay hopeful.
Mm.
You know, we were trying to not accept.
Yeah, you live in hope.
Yeah,
you live in hope. Yeah.
But we had some beautiful conversations. You know, he was very he was grateful for the incredible life that he got to live. You know, he kept saying to me, like, I've lived 10 lifetimes. I'm so lucky. You know, like, don't ever feel sorry for me. Like, I've had the most incredible life. I'm grateful. You know. Like, you must go and do your thing now.
Yeah.
And that was really beautiful for me. And yeah, man, like, it's, I think also just seeing how much it fed him.
Yeah.
How much, you know, it was wonderful to see how, you know, it gave him life, literally.
Yes, yes.
Like, he was fighting to do more shows. You know, I mean, in that last few years, we wrote an album together.
Yeah.
He wrote a book. We did a world tour. Like, I mean, he was told he had 6 months to live, bro. He lived 5 years, you know. Yeah. and he did so much. So I was really proud of him and grateful for that time, because it's like we squeezed all of these adventures into a short amount of time, and we had so many beautiful music connections over that.
And adventures you might not have necessarily had at that level had you not had a countdown.
Yeah. It's a horrible thing, man, but it does bring you straight to your heart.
Yes.
You know, it brings you complete clarity.
Let's talk about Jesse Clegg.
Yes.
That's why you're here.
Indeed.
We're going to start with a rapid 10. Okay. Yeah, just to ease you into.
A rapid 10?
Yes.
Okay.
First song you ever learned to play from start to finish?
Whew. It was probably like Wonderwall by Oasis, like, you know, like one of these like classic guitar songs, because I played guitar and I sang, so it was like probably like a Nirvana song. Like, I was a rock kid, so like,
sure.
Yeah, probably Oasis, Wonderwall.
A song you wish you'd written yourself?
Sure. Jeez, man, you're asking me like questions that I have to like scroll through my whole music.
Exactly.
Life.
Absolutely.
I mean, the thing that's coming up is like Radiohead, like Karma Police, or one of those classic.
An artist that should never, ever be remixed.
An artist that should never be remixed.
Yeah.
Probably Bob Dylan, just because it just is what it is.
Yeah.
You can't do anything with it.
What are you going to do to it?
You either love it or hate it.
An artist you'd love to collaborate with, dead or alive? Now that Masaki has been ticked off the box.
Yeah. I mean, I must say, like, I'm very grateful for the collaborations I've already had. You know, I would have said Sjava, but we've just done two songs together. So, Coldplay, I guess.
Yeah. Vinyl, streaming, or live performance, which one matters most to you?
I think as a consumer of music, I listen to Spotify, you know.
Sure.
I like to just have access, but as a music maker, the live experience is the most important.
The first album you ever bought with your own money?
It was probably like Nirvana.
Yeah. Do you still have it?
I think I do. I just don't know where it is, but I've got my old CD collection.
Yeah. I remember walking into a music store with my parents when I was about 5, 6 years old, and I saw the Jackson 5 ABC vinyl, purple vinyl. And because I saw kids on the cover, I cried for them to buy it for me. So that was my first vinyl. The ABC album by the Jackson 5, and I still have it.
Wow.
But the thing that inspired me about it was that there was children on the cover.
Yeah. Bro, my baby, she's 4 years old. She is obsessed with Michael Jackson and the Jackson 5.
Good. She has good taste.
Obsessed. She is. She can sing any Jackson 5 song on the catalog. It's unbelievable.
Studio or stage? Where do you feel most at home?
Definitely studio, just because that my first love of music started as a songwriter. And that was the like the thing that like made me fall in love with music, because it was like a language that you can learn to speak and convey complicated feelings and emotions in ways that no other art form can. So I think, and I had to learn to get comfortable on stage. So that's taken me like some time to get, you know, find my space there. But studio is my first love.
South African artists people need to pay attention to right now.
I really think this band Internet Girl is really interesting. They're doing some really cool things. I mean, in the Afro house space, I'm loving Draga, I'm loving Sanel, like, you know, all those guys.
The scene is so dope right
now. Yeah, it's so dope, bro. There is so much going on. Tuxin, I just did a session with Tuxin recently. It was so amazing. Like, I think right now, South Africa is in like this renaissance of creativity. It's just so exciting, bro. And like, I've been listening to a lot of the current Maskandi guys. Like, Maskandi's having this comeback, you know. I feel like my dad would be like, wow, like this music that we were making in the 60s and 70s is like suddenly having this moment.
It's got
again.
This pop appeal.
Yeah,
it's the craziest thing. And like, you have youngsters making it,
and it still feels like Maskandi. It hasn't been like reimagined to the extent that it's unrecognizable. It's really like paying tribute to this like genre.
Still sounds like a Castrol oil can.
Yeah.
You know, with fish and tackle on it.
Yeah. And it's that sound, bro. I love it so much. Yeah.
When people hear the name Jesse Clegg in 20 years, what do you hope comes to mind first?
Jeez. I mean, I just hope that I'm remembered for some good songs that touched people and moved people and meant something to people.
And finally, one song of Dad's that still gives you goosebumps every time you hear it.
It's got to be Cool Crazy. Yeah. He wrote that song for me. It's a song about a father talking to their son.
Yeah.
And it has such deep meaning for me. It's been a song that's carried me through my whole life.
Can you sing it for us?
As I walked in here, one of the guys was like, "Ah, Jesse Mfana. Ah, So it's a song that's been with me, man. Like, you know, so that song for me has been so special. He wrote it the year I was born, and I was on the album cover with him on the Cool Crazy Beautiful World album cover on his shoulders as a baby. So it's just this beautiful gift that he gave me.
And it was 1988, right?
Yeah.
1988, I feel, was a very special year. Because, yes, there was, 3 years into a state of emergency, but there was a sense of things are going to turn around in this country.
Yeah.
And I was next door in Bots.
Right.
And even next door in Bots, you could feel that things are going to change.
Yeah.
And it was an incredible year, even just in terms of music.
Yeah.
I mean, you speak to people in the party scene in the UK, they'll tell you about the Summer of Love in Ibiza. For instance, and all of that was in 1988. The chart toppers at the time were not only your dad, Brenda Fassie, Stimela, Michael Jackson, Prince, Paula Abdul, New Edition. 88 was a massive
year. Graceland.
So you were a great production, sir.
I came out. I would love to take credit for just inspiring all of that. But yeah, it was a good time in music, as it is right now, man.
Absolutely.
I think music goes in these like cycles, and there's just these beautiful bursts of creativity every couple of years, and I think we're in that moment right now again.
Yes, sir. So this is Wow, What a Week.
Yes.
Tell us about your week. How's your week been?
Yeah, this week has been hectic, bro.
Yeah.
I just released a album with Msaki.
Yeah.
Came out I think literally a week ago.
That's why we have you here.
And it's been a very beautiful 3-year journey of creating this music together. It's just been we had this really cool album launch. We performed the album for the first time, like hearing those songs on stage for the first time, singing them together was just such a thrill. Had some of our close industry friends at the event and like to just, you know, let them to share it with them, you know, Sunil, Trezor, Sjava, Muzi, you know, just such an awesome group of musicians, like some of my favorite musicians in the country came to support us, which was just so beautiful. And yeah, man, it's just, it's been a milestone week for me. I mean, you know, I think I've made music in a certain space for a long time.
Yes.
And I've been very curious about trying new things and exploring, and you know, my friendship with Msaki has blossomed into this beautiful project, and I'm really grateful and excited to share it.
Who needs to get or listen to this album?
I think everyone.
Because you know, you guys are almost from two different worlds. Almost.
Yeah.
But I understand why it makes sense for the two of you to make music together.
Yeah. I mean, well, firstly, we're very, very close friends.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the music is spawned from a very deep friendship. But, you know, the album is about loss and grief. And about, it's a very romantic album, but it's also about letting go of that love.
Yes.
And I think when me and Msaki met, we were both going through some pretty deep personal losses, like in our own lives separately. You know, I just lost my life partner to cancer, and I had a newborn baby. So I was a brand new parent and grieving this this loss. She was going through.
And still dealing with the fact that, yes, I might have lost dad some years back, but it's a loss you deal with for the rest of your life.
Yeah. I mean, it was 2 years apart, so it wasn't that, it wasn't a big, it was a very crazy time for me, you know? So I was feeling, I was in a crazy space, man.
What do you think got you through that period?
I think my music got me through it, you know, like music for me is a way to process my feelings.
Yes.
You know, I mean, I had my family and my community and my friends, and like, I was very grateful to have like everyone came and huddled around me. You know, my mom moved in with me and like helped me with my baby. And like, you know, there's just so much love and support and stuff. Music, like just writing about this experience, it's such a cathartic, therapeutic experience for me to write this, to write music about what I'm going through, to put it down and hear it back and hear your feelings and separate yourself from those feelings and analyze it and try and get a little spotlight on where you're at in your mind and in your heart. Msaki was a big part of helping me through that time. Sure. You know, like we met in that time, and she was going through her own personal losses, and her family was, you know, she had a big family reshaping, you know, and to see someone who was also a single parent, also in the music industry, raising kids, great kids, you know, like had a beautiful relationship with her kids, it made me feel like, wow, this is totally possible, and it's actually beautiful, and we can do this, you know. And then, you know, we really just started talking and like started like relating to each other and being vulnerable with each other, and like and the album came out of that time of just like, you know, what does losing love mean to you? You know, like the pain you feel is directly proportionate to the immensity of the love you had, you know? So there's something to feel gratitude about.
Yeah. It's almost a blessing and a curse to love deeply.
Yeah.
Cause like you're saying, the grief will be as deep as the love was.
Yeah. Yeah, and to feel the depth of that and the and the height and the beautiful, you know, ascendance of that at the same time, and try and process that full spectrum, is you need people around you who get that, you know, and you need love and you need support, and I think that is what our friendship started as. I mean, and you know, it sounds like I'm talking about like a trauma bond or something, but actually we had a really wholesome, fun, beautiful time together. You know, it was painful, but it was like it was like this thing of like, okay, I've lost my family, but a new family is emerging.
Yes.
And this is also family. And yes. Like I can feel safe here. And
there'll be no vacuum
left.
Yes.
And so I think just to go back to your question, like, I think this album is for everyone in the sense that we all experience loss. We all experience love. Mm. It's the one inevitable thing in life is that it's temporary. It's all temporary. And that's what makes it beautiful.
Sure.
And the album dives into the nuances of all the hard questions, but also seeing beauty in them and finding the gratitude.
Mm. Are you religious? Do you pray?
I'm not religious. I'm spiritual.
I believe in
energy and the truth of, I mean, I actually, to be honest, the closest resonance I've had in terms of a religious context is actually Zulu
yes.
traditional ancestor belief. You know, like
yes.
I believe that the ancestors are with us.
Yes.
I believe that there's something to honor about their memory.
Mm.
I believe that you can speak to them, that they're with us, and you can get their blessing and their wisdom by accessing their energy and accessing their,
sure.
you know, just that to me really resonates actually far more than I guess I'm Jewish. So
sure.
I haven't had the same like spiritual connection with Judaism, but yeah, there's definitely mysterious things about life and
losing dad and then your life partner 2 years apart. That's a lot.
Yeah,
that's a lot for anyone to have to deal with. Are there any moments where you are asking yourself, what on earth have I done to have this pack of, you know, this hand of cards dealt me?
Yeah, I did have, I had like a weird anger and I didn't know where to direct that anger.
Yes. Hence, I was asking if you're religious.
Yeah.
If you're mad at God or the universe or whatever it was, the energy that maybe you felt was after you at the time.
Yeah. I did have that. But it didn't feel like it was serving me. Mm. And so I moved through it quite quickly. And I've got to say, man, like my baby, and you know, it's such a beautiful experience to have a young child and bring this new life into the world.
Mm.
And I was also lucky to be able to share in her perspective, because the world is full of wonder.
Yes.
You know, the world is this magical place to a child.
Mm.
And you want to support that, and you want to be someone who's like, yes, look at how beautiful this is. It's all magical. Like, it's wondrous.
Mm.
And that actually was like such a useful reminder for me, you know, to be like, you know what, I have this experience because I'm going through this thing.
Yes.
But here's a child who's just emerged, and this place is so magical, and there's so much color and beauty, and there's so much to discover, and it's all an adventure.
Mm.
And so I had those two perspectives moving through me all the time. And I just, you know, I took it slow. I processed it. I had, you know, great community around me, so I've tried to push through those feelings. It's not easy, man. It's a journey.
Was there a point where you and Danny realized that we're not going to win this fight?
Yeah, there was.
Do you remember what that point was, where you realized that we need to make peace and make the most of what we do have?
Yeah. She decided that she wanted to stop treatment.
Uh-huh.
And I was really upset. I was angry with her. Because I was like, you know, we got a fight, we got a baby, you know.
Yes.
And she made peace.
Mm.
And I was initially it was hard for me. And then I accepted it, and I was so proud of her. And she had dignity and grace, and she was incredible with how she handled it all.
Mm.
And I aspired towards her beautiful way of accepting these hard things. And it's something that we all have to accept, you know. And it was a very hard time, but I am grateful. I think for me, the lesson is like, you know, if you lose someone, it's very important that you allow yourself to feel sad, feel angry, feel all the things you need to feel. Because once you move past that, you get to a place where you can revisit those memories and feel joy.
Yeah.
You know, and I look back on those times now, and it makes me sad, but I get such gratitude and joy. Mm. Because if you don't process those feelings, then you actually lose the person twice.
Absolutely.
You know, because then it's just a trigger.
Mm.
You know, and I don't want to have that. I want to be able to I want my baby to know her mom. Yes. I want her to have a deep connection to her. She was an amazing, special person. And I have to process this thing so that I can bring her back and feel all the things that we got to experience together.
You know what I found wild about grief, especially losing someone that's been a part of your life for a very long time, that is not a parent? What I found wild about it was, so losing my ex-wife and mother of my kids, we'd spoken and communicated every single day for 25 years. Mm. Every single day. Even within our 3-year separation or our 2-year divorce, every single day we communicated. Mm. And then it stops.
Yeah.
Then it stops.
The absence.
Like there's nothing after that. Nothing.
Yeah. They're present by their absence.
Yes.
Because you feel yes. that missing thing.
Yeah.
There's like an emptiness.
Yeah.
And it's up to you how you want to fill that emptiness, man. Mm. You know, you can either fill it with fear and grief and sadness, or you can fill it with like, these are memories that we got to share.
Mm.
We got to witness things together. We got to grow together.
Mm.
And let me fill this empty space with gratitude for that, for that experience we shared. You know, and that has been my journey, like trying to fill it with gratitude.
Do you ever find yourself talking to her like she's around?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I talk to her all the time. And, you know, I think my baby also talks to her.
Yeah.
You know, she's also aware of her. She was very young, but her body remembers her.
Yes.
You know, the young kids, they remember their moms. So she's very present in our house.
Looking at you as a solo dad, what do you think Danny's looking down, thinking or laughing about?
Right. Well, firstly, I have the most awesome baby in the world. Like I've traveled with
this. She's 4 now?
She's 4, yeah.
Yeah.
She's 4 years old. We've moved houses 4 times in the last 4 years. So every time we move houses, she's like, Dad, this house is cool, but when are we moving to the next house?
Oh, wow.
Because we've had, you know, it's obviously been like a lot of family upheaval and all this stuff. Yes. So we've moved and now
to her, it's now a game we're playing.
Yeah. She just, in her mind, she's like, every year, people just take all their stuff, put it into a truck and move to another house.
It's what people do.
Yeah, that's just the normal thing. But she travels with me almost everywhere I go. She's been to 8 countries in her 4 years of life. That me and her amazing. Sit on the plane. We've flown to New York. We've done 35-hour flights, just me and her. Mm. She's traveled all across South Africa. She's been to Israel, Mexico, Canada. Like, she's been all over the world.
Mm.
And she's like my little travel buddy.
Yes.
And I think, you know, Danny was such an amazing, she loved traveling. You know, when I'd met her, she'd backpacked around the world.
Yes.
She'd traveled to more places than I had, which was, that's saying a lot. And she would be proud of me for continuing the family tradition of just like a little baby on the road. You know, like my baby just travels everywhere. She's so secure in herself. She's so confident.
Mm.
She's growing up and her little personality and creativity and confidence is just emerging. Sure. And it's so beautiful to see. And I think that I was always nervous having kids.
Mm.
And Danny believed in me as a father.
Yes.
And she gave me the sense that I could do this.
Mm.
So I think she would be proud of me for doing it and for getting so much joy from it.
So I'm going to ask this like an African uncle would. You guys,
that's right. We're going deep today. Jeez,
you guys were together for 10 years. Why did you not get married, my son? Why were you not married?
Ah, man.
Did you ever get that pressure? Because within African culture, you'll often be asked that. But you're playing games. Why are you not getting married?
Yeah.
And for me, I'm a big believer in whatever works for the couple must be allowed to prevail.
Yeah. Look, I think like, as I said, man, I'm not like religious in a specific context of a type of religion. I think we would have gotten married, you know, if things had turned out different. But I think it didn't mean it didn't mean that much to us. You know, we really loved each other. We didn't need...
there wasn't a goal or destination.
We were both on our... We were very free and connected, and there was never a sense that, like, we need this thing to confirm and sign a contract. It just felt right the way it was.
Yes.
You know? So I think we would have, though, if, you know, now after we had a kid and everything, it would have been different, yeah.
Mm. Solo parenting 101. Someone that is about to become a solo parent or has just become a solo parent, how would you advise them to go about it?
Look, I was very nervous, and I must say, like, I've had a lot of help from my mom, from my family. I think, like, for me, the journey has been to, you know, I think when you're a solo parent, you're kind of the mom and the dad. Kind of take both roles. So I try to be as nurturing as I can with my baby and really make her feel loved.
Mm.
But I also need to be her dad, and I need to be strict, and I need to be disciplined, and she needs to know that there's a boundary.
Yes.
And I think that little balance becomes something that you learn and engage in, and it becomes a little easier the more you do it.
Mm.
And, you know, you have to trust your kids, man. Yeah. You really have to trust them. You know, like, I've worked with my kid with play therapists to talk about, you know, our family looks a little bit different. There's nothing wrong with that. Yes. Some families have dads, some families have moms, some families have two dads, some families have, you know, one mom and a granny. Like, everyone's family is different. There's nothing wrong with our family. You don't have to feel any kind of way about that. You know, when you go to school and some people have this kind of family, we have this kind of family. It's all good.
Sure.
And just, like, making her feel like we can talk about any issue. Dad's not scared to talk about it.
Yes.
You know, if you want to talk about mom, if you want to talk about that you're feeling sad about it, that something feels off, like, I want her to know that there's always a line of communication that we can have. It's always there anywhere we need to go.
One thing I found for me also is you must jump in.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I remember an aunt of mine asking, so am I going to leave my kids with my mom or the other grandmother? Because sometimes people do that because you are so overwhelmed and you know that they've got another home. They can go live with their grandmother.
Yeah.
I was like, no, these are my kids. I want to raise them and I want to jump right in.
100%.
And it just makes you more full-time than ordinarily you would be.
Yeah.
But I'm finding that I needed it and they needed it.
Yeah.
It's one thing to lose a parent. Now to feel like you've lost a second parent, being shipped off somewhere or being raised by other people, I felt would have been unfair on them.
Yeah.
And not me judging people that do that because circumstances are not the same.
Yeah.
Sometimes you need to drop them off with grandma because you are still trying to find yourself, find your feet.
Yeah.
So I found that getting involved and getting in it, yes, it's tiring because sometimes you're working double time, literally.
Yeah.
But it's got to be done.
Yeah. I agree, man. I mean, I think my baby, as much as I've been there for her, she saved my life, bro.
Yes.
She has saved my life. Your kids raise you as well.
Mm.
You know, they show you things about yourself.
Yes.
They make you prioritize in a different way. You know, I was so nervous about having kids because I was like, yes, it's my career. Like, I've got to be on the road. I've got to be in studio. I've got to be actually, like, what your kids reveal to you is that everything that you're going to do is time away from your child.
Yes.
So that thing better be worth it.
Yeah.
You know, because suddenly this thing, your time becomes very valuable to you because you want to be with your kid. You want to be there for those special moments.
Mm.
So if I'm going to be here doing a podcast, it needs to be something that means something to me. Like, I'm here because I'm not with my baby, so I'm choosing this.
Mm.
And it actually, as someone who's very career orientated, like, it's actually made me prioritize in a very helpful way. And, you know, I love being a dad. I love watching her grow. I love sharing things with her and her sharing things with me and watching this little person emerge. It's been such a joy for me as someone who's gone through these losses. This thing is like the universe has taken things away from me, but it has given me this incredible light. You know, the light and joy of this little girl is just whew. It's infinite.
What has Jesse learned about Jesse on this journey?
You know, I think I've just grown up a lot, man.
Yeah.
You know, like, I think I've got much more realistic a realistic sense of what I want to do, who I am, what I'm capable of. You know, I don't feel like I need to prove anything to anyone.
Yeah.
You know, I've paid my dues. I feel settled in my art. I feel confident in the value that I can bring. And I feel focused, man.
Sure.
You know, and I feel, you know, there was a period that I, you know, especially when I started out, there was all these comparisons and stuff like that. And it was hard for me. I was like 22 years old, bro. Like I didn't know who I was. And I'm proud of myself for moving through that and staying true to my own artistic vision and never kind of straying off the course. And just holding space for my family. You know, my dad was also an amazing family man. You know, he created a very special space for us, me and my brother, in his life. We always felt like we had this very, very beautiful connection to my dad, that he would put everything aside if we needed something. And I hope and I aspire to create that with my baby.
Sure.
So my priorities are clear, you know, that's been helpful.
You know, you speak about how you have an incredible tribe around you, got an incredible community that show up for you. Mom moved in when you lost Danny. How have you managed to show up for mom? Because as much as she's showing up for you, she's still dealing with her loss.
Yeah. Look, it's funny, man. I mean, it was, we got to relate to each other in a very surprising way. Because
you both lost your partners.
Yeah, we were both like widows.
Yes.
You know, just very strange. I was like, okay, I see what you've been going through. This is hard.
Yeah.
And you know, in my mom's case, it was like 45-year relationship, man.
Yeah,
you know,
dude.
So long, is their whole
dude,
life. You know,
geez, man.
And you know, you want this person to move on, and like I think when I went through it, I was like, wow, this is actually very complicated. You know, and I think we've been very patient with each other and tried to hold space for each other, and also like try and push each other. You know, like come on, we can do this. Like, what would Dad want for you? Or what would Danny want for me? Would she want me to be paralyzed and stuck and
exactly,
you know, and just mourning all the time? No, she would want me to live my life. Like I think that's what my dad said to me. You know, he was like, you don't need to feel sad for me. I had an amazing life. Don't worry about me. You go do your thing.
Go build your.
Yeah. I've had the most incredible life.
Yeah.
Like I couldn't be more grateful.
Yeah.
Go and do your thing. Don't look back. Like, I'll be there. Don't worry. You know?
And he's been there.
Yeah. Every step of the way, man.
Yeah.
You know? It's, shoof, bruh. You're going to make me cry, bruh.
I apologize, but we do have Kleenex if you need.
On your bag of tricks.
I'm a believer in, yes, you must cry, but also you must cry neatly.
Yeah.
It can't be a messy cry on TV. Yeah.
Just snot dribbling down.
Exactly. You must just dab a little bit, don't
Yeah. No, yes, man.
We're still talking about the EP with Msaki. What is it? Entropy.
Entropy, yeah.
Yes. Where do we catch you guys in action, either doing promos or live shows? I mean, I know this is going out like today, this Friday, but last night you had a corporate, for argument's sake.
Yeah.
When are you guys going to bring each other into each other's worlds where maybe you have a booking and she tags along?
Yeah, so I mean, the most important thing now for us is to bring the live presentation to people.
Absolutely.
You know, like it's not just a studio project, this is a live project. So we debuting the set at the Montreux Jazz Festival in Cape Town at the end of March, 28th of March, Saffershire. And it's going to be beautiful. It's in a church, really like beautiful venue, really intimate. We've got an amazing band of musicians, like some of my band members and some of her band members. So it's been like a really nice coming together. And then we headlining Bushfire this year, which I don't even know if that's announced, but it's announced right now.
you heard it here first. Jesse Clegg and Msaki, Bushfire this year.
Yeah, so we're doing that. We want to do something special in Joburg, probably like a theatre production later this year. And we want the project to live in a live space. And also like our shows are going to be like we're going to collab on each other's songs as well. Yes. So she's going to play her songs, I'm going to play my songs, and then we'll play our album together. Because
yes.
we've both got such a long catalog of music, so we can fill the time with...
You are spoiled for choice
yeah.
in terms of which direction to go on any given day.
Yeah, exactly. And also the other cool thing, also not announced yet, but we're doing a US tour in April. We're doing five shows on the East Coast, New York, Washington, Philly, Boston. So we're about to announce a US tour as well.
When you do some of your US gigs, are you at a stage now where it's Jesse Clegg fans and not just homesick South Africans who come through?
Is there a difference? I mean, look, I mean, to be honest, bro, like I had the very special privilege of performing at Carnegie Hall a year ago, and it was me and Zolani, and we played this incredible show at Carnegie Hall in New York, and it was so interesting because it was homesick South Africans,
yes,
and then it was genuine Jesse Clegg fans, yes, and genuine Zolani Mahola fans, and it was some Americans who were like, I don't know who these people are, but this looks interesting.
Yes.
And experiencing it for the first time. And there's yes. just always this beautiful mix of like, these people know the music, these people don't know it, and we're getting some energy from them that we didn't expect. And
yes.
that's always beautiful feedback.
Mm.
And that show was like such a stressful show, but so beautiful. Like, and from that show, like there's been a lot more like US opportunities that have opened up for me.
Yes.
So I don't know. I mean, I think South Africans, wherever we are in the world, we always feel this connection to our home.
Yeah.
And that's wonderful. Like, I love that. And we also, I would, you know, I want my music to spread to genuine new fans as well. Mm. So it's always like, I love both people in the audience.
Sure. For a lot of performing artists, a Carnegie Hall is a bucket list experience.
Yeah.
I mean, Carnegie Hall went up, what, 1800s?
Yeah.
Since the late 1800s, to do Carnegie Hall is almost I can die now. On a scale of 0 to I almost pooped myself.
No, that... Bro, and there's a crazy story about that show.
Yeah.
Like, firstly, yeah, Carnegie Hall, I mean... The Beatles have played. Yes. Elvis Presley has yes. played this venue. Like, this is hallowed ground, bro.
Yes.
Like, Jimi Hendrix, you know, Led Zeppelin, like any band you can imagine. Aretha Franklin, like Stevie Wonder. I don't know. You can just, the list is endless. But.
And Jesse Clegg.
Yeah. I'm in that list somehow. I made it on that list. It was such an amazing opportunity.
Mm.
We rehearsed the show for like 6 weeks.
Yeah.
You know, we really wanted to bring something very intentional.
Mm.
We had like a lighting thing. We had video backdrops. It was all very specifically done. And like, we really wanted to have a very intentional presentation for what we were playing. And 3 days before we left for America, half the band's visas got declined.
Oh, wow.
So we landed in New York on the Tuesday night
with half the band.
Yeah, and the show was on Friday and half the band wasn't with us.
Wow.
So we were like jet lagged. We had to play the biggest show of our career and we had to rehearse like 4 new musicians within 48 hours to learn like 3 hours of music. That like two exact timings, because it's all video, it's all connected to the video. So it's these exact arrangements. So we had this like me and Zolani Shay, man, like we were like bonded in trauma. Like it was just like we were in the trenches, like rehearsing nonstop back to back until we literally got on stage at Carnegie. And like before we went on, we were both like so exhausted and so jet lagged. And we'd been rehearsing for like 3 days straight. And I remember, like, I'm such a fan of Zolani and she's such a legend. And we just hugged each other before the show and we were both kind of teary eyed because this is not at all how we imagined this thing was going to go.
Yeah.
And we just said to each other, like, we're going on there. We've done everything we can. Mm. We're going to have an amazing show. Let's just have fun. Even if there's a mistake, whatever happens, you know, it's the music is going to be the music we hear.
Mm.
Let's get out here and have a good time. And it was actually such a fun show. Like, everything leading up to it was pure stress and anxiety, but the actual experience of playing on that stage, the audience was so awesome. We got a standing ovation at the end.
Yes.
And it was this beautiful experience. So Shout out Zolani. Thank you for being such a legend and getting us through this thing. Like we both got each other through it.
Now you've got a new partner in Rhyme. And you guys are about to you're about to hit the road.
Indeed.
But because your EP with Msaki is so personal, are there any songs you think might be a challenge to perform? Even if we might not see it, but behind the scenes, just in terms of in your mental, it's a heavy song to perform for you.
Yeah, I mean, there's one song for me that I wrote specifically about the loss and the grief that I was experiencing.
Yes.
You know, it was quite early on in the process, and that song, it's called Awake in the Nighttime. And that song really talks about, just the darkest moments of that experience. And we wrote that song in LA with a really close friend of mine, Damien Taylor, who's a Grammy-winning producer. He's worked with some of me and Msaki's both, like one of our favorite bands, some of our favorite bands. And we went into the session to just write a song, and it turned into this like 3-hour like therapy session of like just having very deep conversations.
Yeah.
And I went into some very dark memories of that time, and so the song emerged out of that. And it's the kind of song that I feel like I couldn't have written if I didn't have a very close friend with me, like someone who could hold space for me in that way. And Msaki was that person, and I'm grateful to her for allowing me to go there and for her to hold my hand in that darkness. But you know, there's something about writing songs that when you write a song like that, like there's songs that I wrote with my dad, you know, that when I perform them, I sometimes feel this shudder, you know, I feel his presence, or I feel his connection, and it makes me want to cry. And there's other times where I perform a song like that and it makes me feel so strong.
Yes.
So connected, you know, like this is in the world. It exists. We made this and it's never going away.
Yeah.
You know, and it means something to people, you know, like my song, I've Been Looking, which is a song that I wrote with my dad and performed with him on our tour. Actually, this week it just hit 1 million streams on Spotify. So thank you. Shout out to everyone who's been listening to it. And, you know, that song was a chance for us to say something to each other about what we mean to each other in each other's lives. And I play that song sometimes and I see someone in the audience and I see them crying. And I know that they've lost someone. Like I know exactly what they're going through, you know, and they'll come and talk to me after the show and they'll be like, I lost my dad. And I listened to the song and this song has meant so much to me, you know, and it's just, it's such a beautiful gift. This music thing that we get to do, you know, we get to make people feel connected, make them feel less alone. And their story brings me joy and brings me comfort, you know, and we get to share in this thing. So that is such a privilege, man. I feel so blessed to be able to be a some kind of conduit for that.
So we're hitting the road with Msaki. The EP is out. We've got performances lined up, but you still have your individual careers.
Yeah. There's also that.
Exactly. So where are you going next? What's as next
on my thing?
Exactly.
Yeah, I've got a lot of songs that I'm busy finishing recording.
Yeah.
I've got a Jesse Clegg single coming out later this year. There's another big project that me and Msaki are working on that is to be announced, which is going to be incredible.
Yeah.
That includes a lot of different artists. But I think for me, as Jesse Clegg, I'm still on my trajectory. You know, I still love creating the music in the space that I've built. I've got some really cool collabs coming out. I've got
mentioned Sjava early on.
Yeah, Sjava. I was a feature on Sjava's album that just dropped. I'm on Guye.
Yes,
and he was on our album, Entropy. Me and Msaki's album. He was our only feature on the album.
Yeah. And why is Java?
I mean, firstly, I'm such a fan of his. Like, I just think he's an incredible artist. And we've known each other for a while. He actually was like, he made a cameo in one of my music videos. And he hit me up to feature on his album like a year and a half ago. And we wrote Guye together. And while we were in the studio writing the song, I was like, bro, I'm also working with Msaki on an album and I want to play this stuff for you.
Yes.
And I played him Wayside Lover, which is the song that he's featured on. And he was like, bro, this is so dope. Like, I want to be on this, you know? So it was really just a friendship and a connection. And he happened to be in the studio while I was working with Msaki, and he came on that song. And now me and Msaki are both separately featured on his album and he's featured on our album. So we've just like, we've become like a little trio. It's hilarious.
So is there maybe an opportunity to like have a Juluga 2.0?
Bro, like some of the comments on the music videos for this project with me and Msaki have been so funny.
Yeah.
Because it's like some of her fans don't know who I am.
Yeah.
And some of my fans don't know who Msaki is.
Exactly. Like two different worlds.
Yeah.
Yes.
So like some of the comments are like, oh, this is so nice. Look at Jesse, like bringing a new artist into, like giving this artist a platform.
He's always been this guy.
And then like on her side, it's like, Msaki, who is this white guy, bro? Like, who have you got with you here? Like, who is this guy?
Yeah.
And it's actually been so interesting, man. Like, as we said, like there's this like beautiful renaissance in South African music, but we are still a little bit like stuck in our boxes. You know, like we're stuck in our categories and genres, you know, like algorithmically, music always tries to like create these boxes for you're this genre. So you mustn't go over there, bro.
Yes.
Like, and it's not good for your career. And everyone will advise you to do this and that. And like, actually, if you speak to the artists, you'll be surprised at what music they listen to and how eclectic their taste is. Mm. And we don't need to feel any fear about collaborating in new, interesting ways. Sure. You know? And I hope that some of the impact of this project is to encourage more unusual collaborations.
I was going to say, so would you say cross-genre collaborations are what the world needs right now?
I think so. I mean, listen, look at what my dad did, bro. Yes. Like, you know, it's crossover music. Like all these genres exist and they're so beautiful, but there's something that can be more than the sum of its parts when two artists get together that are coming from different places, you know.
Sure.
So it was such a joy to create this album with Msaki because we had different influences, and so she had ideas that I would have never thought of, and I had ideas that she would have never thought of, and like just enjoying that, like the difference is so beautiful, you know.
Absolutely.
I mean, like if you look at Juluka, like, you know, my dad was learning, you know, he was listening to like obviously my Skandi music, but he also was growing up in jazz music and rock music and the music that his community was listening to. So he brought all these different influences, and I think that's such an amazing thing about music.
So
I don't know, I love that those collaborations, and I hope that more of that happens.
Sure. Now, thinking of your younger self, with all that you know and all that you've been through, if you could write a song or sing a song to young Jesse, what song would that be? What would it talk about? Or what would it speak to?
You know, the thing that comes to mind is just, I keep going back to the lyrics of the song my dad wrote for me, Cruel, Crazy, Beautiful World. You know, like there's such depth in that song, because what he's saying to me is that, you know, you got to wash with the crocodiles in the river. You got to swim with the sharks in the sea. You got to live with a crooked politician.
Why don't you sing it to us, bro?
Bro, I'm not singing right now, bro. Bro, you're about to make me cry. Now you're trying to get me to sing, bro. Yes, this is a full-on vibe. Trust those things that you can never see.
Yeah.
It's a cool, crazy, beautiful world. Every day you wake up, I hope it's under the blue sky. And one day when you wake up, I'll have to say goodbye.
Yeah.
You know, and it's a father saying to their son, there's going to be dark times. And he says, you won't escape loneliness. Maybe you'll lose hope too. It's like this, it's advice to a son and saying like, I've got your back always, and I want the best for you, but I also won't always be here.
Yes.
And there's going to be a time where I'm not here. And these things are up to you. you know, and like you have to honor yourself. You must give yourself these gifts.
Yes.
And that is like, I would love to write a song like that for my baby.
Mm.
And I'm working on a song for her actually at the moment. But sure. Like that, you know, I didn't even understand the song fully until I went through all these things.
Yes.
And I've revisited it. And it's been like, this is just truth.
He wrote deeply at a time, knowing that it will happen at some stage.
Yeah. I mean, the foresight, like, I don't know. He had a very special artistic connection to what he who he was and what he wanted to be to me as a father.
Mm.
And so, you know, that's been a song that's just I'm grateful for, you know.
Apparently we are out of time according to management. Two last questions.
I think I'm okay. Yeah, good.
What are you grateful for?
I'm grateful for my baby. Mm. Firstly, like
what's her name?
Her name is Myla.
Myla.
Myla Tandolwethu Clegg. All of us have Sipho has given me and my brother and my baby Zulu middle names.
Yes.
I'm Umpiezwe.
Yes.
My brother is Busani, and Myla's Tandolwethu. I'm grateful for my family. Mm. I'm grateful to my community. You know, I think when you go through hard times, like the people around you become such an important part of how you move through the world.
Yes.
And then I'm grateful for the music, man. I've had such a lucky and blessed life to be able to inherit what my dad gifted us as a family and to protect it. And then also to be a creator in my own right and to have an amazing fan base who have like kept me going and have gone with me on some, you know, some bending journeys, some complicated journeys. Yeah, man. And I'm grateful to at this moment, like with the album that we've just released, I'm really grateful to Imsaki. She's a really deep friend of mine.
Sure.
And I'm so proud of the work that we've done here.
Mm.
And I'm so excited that it's finally in the world.
Yes, sir. And in closing, what does Jesse Clegg fear?
I think I fear stillness.
Yes.
I like to be moving. I like to be on the mission.
Yeah.
Stillness is very scary for me.
Yes.
What do you fear?
I fear one day waking up uninspired.
Mm.
Because my inspiration is what drives me every day.
Yeah.
So that's my fear, that I should never ever wake up uninspired.
Yeah.
Then it would lead to the stillness that I wouldn't know what to do with.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of BS grows within stillness.
Yeah.
So being too still sometimes is not what you need.
Yeah.
Especially if you know yourself.
Yeah.
Some people need to be still.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And sometimes that stillness is you're running away from something and it's important to sit there for a little bit.
Yeah.
But I'm very momentum oriented.
Yes.
Brother, man, I have so much respect for you, bro. Thank you for this deep conversation, man. It's you know, you've been such a you've been like this figure in the industry, both as an artist and as a personality for so long, man. Mm-hmm. And you know, I think it's so difficult to maintain a career in the entertainment world and keep reinventing yourself and keep staying up to date.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to acknowledge you, man. Like, you're a legend.
No, thank you very much, brother, man.
Yeah, man.
All the best to you and Msaki and Mila and Mom and whatever else your heart's desires are, dude.
Thank you, brother.
You've never been afraid to keep reaching, so stay reaching, bro.
Thank you, brother. Yes, appreciate that, man.
And we are done. Jesse Clegg is about to leave the building. Thanks for hanging out with us on Wow, What a Week. Coming to you from Discover TV, they're out in four ways. Make them your stage. Shout out to Keletso Modisa-Geng, our executive producer, and Trevor and his crew at Pezulu Works for all of the cinematography. If we looked good, it was them. If we looked bad, it was us. Until next week, have a great week in spite of yourselves. We're out of here.